Thank you for joining us. So we're continuing on in this little mini-series that we've been on, and so I'm on this series about, Children's Church. Yep, if you are of that demographic, you can go back now, Children's Church. So go ahead and go back and join them back there. All right, so I've been doing this series on why we serve. It's kind of a mini-series within a larger series that I've been doing on 1 Peter. And last week we talked about why we serve, and why we serve because, and the first thing I said was because we love God. And so this week then, we're going to be talking about why we serve, and we serve because He is worthy. So if you want to advance a few slides, Mike, I'm just going to go ahead and skip over some stuff here where it says why we serve, and then we have a list of things there. So we serve because we love God. We serve because He is worthy. We serve because we are thankful. We serve because that is the purpose for which we have been created. And we serve because we're commanded to serve. But today, I'm going to spend some time on the fact that God is worthy. Now, in order to do that, I want to just share with you a couple of stories that have to do with the worthiness, where worthiness was a critical aspect about why these people did what they did. And so the first story I want to share with you before I get into any text, just to pique our interest, is this. There was a missionary, and I've used him before. I've talked about him before, but some of you may not be aware of him. But his name was Jim Elliot. And Jim Elliot was a missionary, I believe, in the 1970s. Maybe earlier, but I think it was around that time. And his goal was to evangelize the Aka Indians in South America. The Aka Indians, I believe, were cannibals. They were a very dangerous tribe. And for weeks and weeks and weeks, they would drop like hatchets and trinkets and things like that down over the jungle floor that could be used by these Indians and then would be associated with them so that when those useful things were in their hand and they saw the missionaries get out of the, it was one of those planes that could land on a river, you know, and they could get out of the plane. And so Jim and four other missionaries began to evangelize these Indians. And it went well at first, but then for whatever reason, the Indians attacked these five young missionary men and killed them. And so before Jim Elliot had died, he penned these words, and the words were, "He is no fool who gives up what he cannot keep in order to gain what he cannot lose." So Jim Elliot knew that he was going to a group of people that would be very dangerous. He knew that he was risking his life. But to Jim Elliot, it was worth the risk to lose his life on behalf of the surpassing greatness of serving Christ and being a key instrument in bringing other people to Christ. And you think, well, okay, so he and these five other guys lost their lives. You know, what's the worth in that? And that's the thing, that sometimes worth is rather hidden, isn't it? We don't always see what something's worth initially or at first. But it was his death that launched perhaps one of the greatest missionary responses in the history of the church. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of young men and women, when they heard about how he sacrificed his death because he believed that his life was worth the possible sacrifice, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of men and women because of that story, went into the mission field and were responsible for bringing tens upon hundreds of thousands of people to Christ. It was his sacrificial death. It was the worth of his life that caused the response that it caused in the history of the world in that way. Now, there's another guy. This guy's named Don Robinson, and maybe some of you have heard of him before. He's kind of a legendary missionary. He wrote the book Peace Child. And so Don Robinson determined that he wanted to minister to the Swai people, or the Sa'i people, in New Guinea. They were also cannibals, and they lived in kind of a swampy forest. Their houses were up on pylons or attached to trees way above the jungle floor. And there were just dozens of villages just, you know, scattered all over the place. And these people were constantly at war with each other. As a people group, the greatest virtue that they shared, so the highest virtue for them was the virtue of betrayal. They just thought it was the most awesome thing in the world to win the trust of someone so that they actually believed that you could be trusted, and then at the perfect moment betray them in a way that you could actually register the shock and the horror on their face. So that was the thing that they all sought in all of the different villages among each other. And so when Don Robinson went to the Sawi people and began to evangelize them, he told them the story about Jesus Christ, about how he came to earth, he was the Son of God, and how he came to save people from their sins. And so as he recounted the story, when he got to the part where when Judas, yes, thank you, gee whiz, when Judas betrayed Jesus, the whole village erupted in laughter. They thought it was the greatest thing that this guy, Judas, could be a friend to Jesus for 3 years and travel with him and win his trust, and then at that crucial moment in the life of Christ, betray him and see him turned over and killed as a result of that. So you might think then that this caused Don Robinson to be a little discouraged. I mean, how do you tell the gospel when to these people Judas was the hero? I mean, he was the greatest one in the whole story, not Jesus. So he was pulling his hair out trying to figure out how to reach these people. And so something happened. During one of the many conflicts that one village had with another village, there were a group of people who were killed and injured. And one of the young men that he had really felt as if he'd been begin making inroads with or to became visibly disturbed. And so he ran to his house, climbed up into the house in which he lived, and he heard a horrible scream. And the man ran out with a young infant clutched to his chest, and he descended down the ladder while the man's wife began to scream at him from up in the house. And from there, he got on the ground and he ran straight towards the village that they had been fighting. And when he got to that village, he took his infant son and he offered that child to that village. And so apparently in that culture, an even higher virtue was that if you wanted to stop fighting a war with another village, you would offer to them a child called a peace child. And as long as that village had that peace child, there could be no war between those two people groups. And so that young man counted it worthy enough to stop the fighting that he would offer his I think it was his firstborn son, to this other village. And as long as that son lived, there was no guarantee how he would be treated. There was no guarantee that he wouldn't get some disease and die a year later, or might die in a conflict with another village. But as long as he lived, there was peace between those two villages. So worthiness was a crucial theme, an element. And so when Don Robinson saw that, he said, well, let me tell you about this son who is a peace child between God and humanity. So worthiness, then, is an important thing that all of us include in the lie in the way in which we live our life. And so I want to talk to you this morning about worthiness, that he is no fool who gives up what he cannot keep in order to gain what he cannot lose. That, you know, so in the gospel reading that was read this morning about how Jesus said, unless you hate your mother, your father, your brothers, your sisters, yes, even your own life, unless Christ is considered to be so worthy that by comparison, it appears as if you hate everything else. So he uses a hyperbolic statement. He doesn't want us really to hate our mothers, our fathers and our mothers, our brothers and sisters, our spouse. He doesn't really want us to hate them. He just wants us to love him so much. He wants us to consider him so worthy that by comparison, it would appear as if we hate our mothers, our fathers, our brothers, our sisters, our spouses, and people like that. That was his point. And his point was, about salt, was that, you know, many of us can put on the pretense of looking like we love God, when in reality we really don't. There are things out there that can look like salt but really aren't salt, that really can't do what salt does. And so that's where we are. So we come to worthiness then as a primary theme about why we serve. And I shared with you last week, of the five reasons why, I think most of us tend to pick one as the primary one, and then the rest of us, and then the rest of them we include in varying degrees. So when I ask, so let me ask you this question. How many of you pick, like, what for you when you serve, is love the primary motivation for you? Is worthiness the primary motivation for you? Like, you serve because God is worthy? And it's not to the exclusion of love, but maybe love isn't the primary reason. Is thankfulness, because you're thankful for what God has done for you, is that a primary reason why you serve? Are you so appreciative for what Christ has done that you can't help but try to return to him at least a portion of what he's done for you? How many of us serve because we feel like that's our purpose? That when we serve, we feel God's pleasure. That it's fulfilling. That we enjoy that. How many of us serve primarily because we're commanded to serve? We do it out of a sense of duty. We're just trying to be obedient. Yeah. And so I think, like I said, I think all of us do all of the above. But I think most of us do one more than we do the others. So I'm asking you, which one do you do more than the others and why? I think that's helpful to do that diagnosis. I think that says a lot about us and maybe ways in which we could grow and change in our own lives. So, when we think about worthiness and the constructs of worthiness, how about this? I mean, in other words, I just want to show you just how much the idea of worth is a part of our life and how we use it in everyday life, but maybe we don't use it as much in our faith. We will say things like, it's not worth my time. So if you can find that where we are there, Mike, it's the second we serve because he is worthy out of service. I've messed Mike up. I've skipped over some stuff here. So that's my fault. But so we might say, it's not worth my time. How many of you said that before? It's not worth my time. Or how many of us have said, it's not worth the effort? It's just not worth the effort. I'm not going to do that because it's not worth the effort. Or how about, it's not worth the sacrifice? The price is too high. I'm not going to do that. Or how about, it's not worth the risk? I'm not going to do that because the risk is too great. The benefit's too small. These are phrases that we say almost mindlessly. These are things that we think. So the idea of worth and worthiness are a primary part about how we live our lives every day. We might even say things like, it's not worth the return. I know the worth that it's going to cost me. I know the return will not be what it is I'm paying. Somebody might have said to Jim Elliot, it's not worth the return. You could get killed and die and eaten. It's not worth it. But little did we know, it was worth the return. Who could have guessed his sacrificial death would have caused what it caused in the world at the time for how many missionaries responded? We use terms like cost-benefit analysis. That's a term about worth. So in the cost-benefit analysis, we have determined that it's either worth this or it's not worth that. We use this term all the time. We make huge decisions based on that term all the time. Government does. Businesses do. Our business plans and marketing strategies are all predicated on worth. If we do it this way, will it get us what we think it's worth? If we use this strategy, if we engage in this plan, my point is that the idea of worthiness dominates our everyday lives. How much does it dominate our everyday faith? What, in our estimation, is Christ worth in our everyday life? Is he worth getting up a little extra early so that you have time to pray and meditate and read? Is he worth the risk that somebody may not appreciate or like who you are because they know now that you are a Christian? Is he worth your resources, your talents, your gifts? Is he worthy of that? It's all there. Look, some of the most iconic biblical texts in the Bible are texts that are predicated on worthiness. Interestingly, many of them revolve around the issue of Satan and God and worthiness as well. So, for example, in the whole book of Job, the underlying theme there is one of worthiness. Satan's bet with God regarding, Job isn't worth it. Take away all that he has, you'll see, he'll curse you to your face. He's not worth what you say he's worth. And then, of course, the struggle that Job has is this: is God worth all of this suffering and pain? And that's the whole battle. Job's wondering if God is worthy of this. If he remains faithful, if he doesn't curse God and die, will that faithfulness of not cursing God and die, will it be worth it? And in the end, it was. The temptation of Jesus by Satan, which you find in all four Gospels, has with it the underlying theme of worthiness. It's interesting to me that in almost every case where Satan is referenced in the Bible, there is associated with that this idea of worthiness in some fashion. So, when Jesus is tempted with bread, Jesus is like, I'm not giving in. It's not worth it. I'm expected to fast. I am fasting on behalf of my ministry and relationship with God the Father. I'm hungry, but succumbing to my hunger is not worth failing in this way. The nations are not worth. So when he's tempted with nations, they're not worth what you say they are, Satan, in comparison to what God the Father has given to me. When Satan offers, when Satan offers for him to bow down before and worship him, Satan and worship, which comes from the word worthy, Satan is not worthy of that, and so Satan flees. In every case, it's an underlying theme of worthiness. The church in Smyrna in the book of Revelations. It's a very poignant passage. There are these people there who are persecuting Christians, and John describes them as belonging to the synagogue of Satan. And basically he's saying, the persecution that you are enduring is worth the crown of life. The persecution that you are enduring is worthy of the crown of life. Once again, we have this association of worthiness and a reference to Satan. So do we live our life as if Christ was worthy of it? Do we live our life as if Christ is worthy of whatever way in which we may have to reject relatives or family, parents or children or even a spouse? They ask us to do and be a certain way, but we say that's not worth it because Christ is worth more than what you're asking. Do we live our life as if Christ was worthy of it? We love the thought that Christ's life was worthy of ours, but we struggle with whether or not our life is worthy enough for Christ. And it's reflected in how we live our lives and how we are obedient. In a text from Isaiah, we read the following. How you are fallen from heaven, O day star, son of dawn. This is a reference to Satan. How you are cut down to the ground, you who laid the nations low. You said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven above the stars of God. I will set my throne on high. I will sit on the mount of assembly in the far reaches of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will make myself like the Most High God. Now, why would Satan say that? He said it because he believed that he was more worthy than God. Would you say this? I will ascend to heaven above the stars of God. I will set my throne on high. I will sit on the mount of assembly in the far reaches of the north. I will raise myself above God because I believe that I am more worthy than he is. Would you say that? But think about this. To not be or do because Christ and his commands are not worthy is the same as considering ourselves to be more worthy than Christ himself. When I say to God, I'm not doing that because it's not worth it to me, I am equally saying to God, I am more worthy than you, even though you command me to do it. It's what I want that's bigger than what you want. That's the equation. So I'm not sure that we fully appreciate when we play with the worthiness thing about the significance of this. What are we really saying to God if we say to him, you are not worthy of my life. You are not worthy of my resources. You are not worthy of my time. You are not worthy of my obedience. When we say that, we say almost what Satan said about how he would ascend to the most. In other words, it's my throne that matters, not yours. It's my commands that count, not yours. So if I say that, have I not ascended? Have I not declared myself greater than God? Now, I realize that most of us don't think it through in that way, but that is the effect that happens to all of us. To choose actions and attitudes that discount God is, in effect, to imitate Satan, who considered himself to be more worthy than God. This is inescapable. So as I was preparing this message, this kind of hit me between the eyes. Because I have to do a lot more, inventory. I have to do a lot more in the way of like an audit about my own life. How many things do I do? How many ways do I think? What kind of attitudes do I embrace that run counter to what the Lord would have for me, and I insist on them, and when I do, I in essence take a position where they are more worthy than what he says. And so I think then, this is the part where the lordship and sovereignty of God comes into play. That God really is sovereign. Whether we want to believe that or think that, he really is, and that he is Lord. And so as Lord has the right to call upon us to live a life that we may not want to live, but we live because he's worthy of that. So let me ask you, what do we hold back because we can't, because we want control of it? Because it's not worth the risk. Because it's not worth the sacrifice. Because it seems as if the cost-benefit analysis doesn't favor us enough. So I'm just asking everybody here to take a moment and to think through. And again, I want to be very clear, I am not moralizing here. I'm not trying to be the Holy Spirit and bring conviction. I'm simply asking a question that I think that is laced in the Scriptures. And so, I think that it gets past us. And when it gets past us, it's kind of tragic for us and for others. What would happen if we lived lives where we consider God to be worthy of every part of our life, to have it, to submit to it, whatever? What would happen? And as a result of that, so when the Paul says, live lives where you consider others better than yourselves, more worthy than yourselves, that would be a Christ-like thing to do. What would happen in our world if people live like that? Be a huge difference. be, I think, really attractive to people who are non-believers. You know, we really do live in this gospel-hardened world. We live in a world where people think they know who Christ is and what the gospel is about, and they do not know. And we think that it's because they lack the right information. And I think that's largely, they have either been misinformed or malinformed or uninformed. Uninformed is they don't know. Malinformed means that they've been intentionally given bad information. Misinformed is they think they understand, but they have some semblance, but they just don't understand the fullness of it. Now, what do you think would make the difference in most people's lives, in addition to maybe some better information? I think the difference is this. People who live lives that are worthy of Jesus Christ. They see the they see how we surrender the whole of our life to Christ and live in submission to Him because He is worthy of that. That we don't live lives where we patronize God. And you know what I mean by patronize. Right? So patronize is you do it, but there's no sincerity involved at all. You just do it because it looks good or you're supposed to or whatever. But no. We live in submission to Christ because He is worthy. We surrender all that belongs to us to Him because He is worthy. We allow His Lordship to rule over all of those things because it's His Lordship, it's His plan, it's His way of doing things that really matters. And how exciting would that be for all of us? So, you know, Ananias and Sapphira in the book of Acts. So you have this dynamic time when all these people are coming to faith. Thousands and thousands of people are coming to faith, and this church is being built up and it's growing and stuff. And you have this couple, Ananias and Sapphira, who try to pretend like they are selling everything they have, like everybody else is selling everything that they have, because that's what Christ was calling them to do in that place and at that time. But they were pretending. So they made a big show of selling everything that they have, but they only gave a portion of it back to the church as if they were giving it all. And they only gave a portion because God was not worthy. It was a worthiness issue. And so they suffered some consequences because of that. If Jesus were to come to you today, if you were to hear the Holy Spirit speak, and He were to say, I want you to surrender this thing because I am worthy of it, what thing could He ask of you that you would be most afraid that He would ask? What would be the thing in your life that you value so much that if Christ were to ask for it, you might not be able to surrender it because the struggle would be whether or not He was worthy. Now, if you're like me, when you have those kinds of inner conversations, like, well, maybe that's just not God really asking me. Maybe it's something else, you know, maybe some other voice that's speaking to me. God would not be asking me something like that. You know, that's just too big, but you get my point. I think that we have to live lives where we have our fingers loosely wrapped around whatever it is that He has given us with the understanding that He could require it of us at any time. I remember the first truck we ever bought. So I wanted to buy a truck, and my wife didn't want me to buy a truck. She likes sedans. I was excited about having a truck. And I had to, in my mind, if I'm going to do this, then two things have to happen. That this can't be something that I want simply because I want it. It has to be something that possesses utility or usefulness through which I can serve. And do you know what happened right after I got that truck? This is true. It was months later that we started getting all kinds of food donated from Giant Eagle. And donated here, and we had a little food pantry back here for several years. And guess who needed a truck to go pick up this food from Giant Eagle all the time that Carol and Joe managed? Remember Carol? Right? I mean, we had stuff sticking out the windows and out the, you know, the tailgate and all that kind of stuff. But it wasn't my truck. Somebody needed help moving or whatever. And there are many people in this room just who are like that as well. They freely give their resources in that kind of a way. Because it's not theirs. It belongs to the Lord. Because he is worthy of him. He is worthy of asking them to use it in that kind of a way. So ask this question again. Maybe I can ask it in a more articulate way. Your treasures. What do we treasure so much that if Christ were to ask us for it, it would be a real struggle for us to think about whether or not he was worthy of it, that he could be trusted with it? Because if you can let go of that, you probably can let go of almost anything. And if you can let go of almost anything, you can live a life where Christ is worthy. And so you serve because he's worthy. What talents do you have that you are willing to surrender to Christ as you serve? What time do you have that you could give to ministry because he is worthy of your time? And it's not something that you kind of fit in, but it's something that you surrender. It's a priority. It belongs to him. It's just as much at the top of the list as anything else. What time? What resources? What talents do you have that you can surrender because Christ is worthy of them? I kid you not, on more than one occasion in the history of since I've been here, I have known people involved in the work field, in the work world, where they would not give of their talents to the work of this church because it violated some principle at their work. So they could use their electrical abilities or their plumbing abilities or whatever for their work, but violated agreements that they had with where they worked. So their work could have that, but Christ could not. It was that clear. So I want to conclude with this final text, and this takes us in a little bit of a different direction, but it reveals the kind of heart that people have. So in the book of Acts, there's this incredible story in Acts 5, verses 33 through 42, where the apostles are preaching the gospel and they are picked up by the Sanhedrin and they demand them to know why are you preaching the gospel. And so, so they tell the story about Christ and about Jesus and what he's done for them. And they have them imprisoned and they want to kill them. And one of the leaders of the Sanhedrin says, look, you know, you got to be careful because this really could be of God as well. So maybe we should just warn them and let them go. So So they call the apostles back in, and they warn them strictly not to speak the name of Christ or to teach about him anymore. And then they have them beaten. So it's not just a warning. They have them beaten. And then they let them go. And after they are let go, this is what is recorded. So this is what, so here the apostles using their time, their talents, and their resources because Christ is worthy. They get in trouble. They are persecuted. They are beaten for using that because Christ is worthy of those things. And this is what is recorded by Luke in Acts 5. So they went on their way from the presence of the council, rejoicing that they had been considered worthy to suffer shame for his name. Now, in our world today, if you have a little ichthus on the bumper of your car and somebody picks it off, you can end up on the 700 Club for persecution, right? You don't have to do much to be persecuted in our world to get notoriety in comparison here. But would that be our response? Like, look, God, I gave you my time, I gave you my talent, I gave you my resources, and then this is the thanks that I get? But this was the heart that they had. I would think it would be good for all of us, for myself and for us as a church family, as we move into the future, as we consider about how we can serve Jesus Christ, to have a heart like these apostles right here. That when we surrender because Christ is worthy, there's no guarantee what will happen. But even if something bad happens, that Christ would still consider us to be worthy enough to suffer for his name, now that takes it to a whole new level. You can't do God favors. You can't. You can only seek his favor as you seek to be worthy and serve him through your time, your talents, and your resources. This church needs all of them. And even more so, the world in which we live need this church to come together, exercising all of our time, all of our talents, all of our resources, so that we can be that light, so that we can serve the world in which we live. That's the way forward. And I hope that you will join me in that way.